Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to start out on working on the Lifelight Bill and open up a work session on Senate Bill 149. It's Kyle. We have an amendment. If you can brief us as to refresh our memory and tell us what the amendment will do.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Senate Bill 149 with the Dash 2 amendment. So just as a quick refresher, it's the underlying statute that's being changed, is 307.022. And what that statute does is it doesn't create necessarily a property tax exemption. Rather, it allows LLCs with a certain makeup, and I'll get to that in just a minute, to qualify for property tax exemptions that are already existing on the books. So the structure with the Dash 2 is it would allow an LLC to be made up of nonprofit organizations as well as a government entity that would be normally exempt as maybe a state or a local government. They can be part of that LLC, and then they can qualify for existing property tax exemptions. And under current law, and there's been some litigation that I don't believe is actually ongoing anymore, but some concern that because nonprofits qualify under different statutes for property tax exemption than, say, a government entity, when the government entity becomes part of the LLC with the nonprofits, they no longer qualify for this look-through 307.022 statute. So the Dash 2 would make those changes to allow a local government or a state government entity or any local government to be part of this LLC and then qualify for property tax exemptions. The changes in the Dash 2 do include that when you qualify for the exemption, the basis for the qualification or the amount of the exemption or the special assessment you would receive under property tax laws is the least amount that would be qualified for any single nonprofit if it owned the property in its entirety. So if one of the owners, if it owned the property, it only would receive a 50% exemption. That's the amount of exemption that the LLC would receive. We do have the paperwork. There's no fiscal, and the revenue impact statement is about $100,000 per year, $200,000 each biennium, going up to about $300,000. And part of that is just the rounding as well. You see some of that growth in there. So just the numbers we're hitting right on the amount of rounds from $200,000 to then $300,000. And that's largely based upon Lifelight, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Is the Dash 2?
Dash 2.
Dash 2.
Would you like to, is there anyone here on assessors or OHSU like to testify on the amendment? Okay.
Sure, I move SB 149-2 amendment dated 2/21/17 into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the Dash 2s into Senate Bill 149. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 149 as amended by the Dash 2 amendment to the floor with a do pass, and then I'll speak to the bill.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 149 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do pass recommendation. Senator Boquist.
Okay, make sure you write this down, Kyle. Okay, just to cover a couple things for the record so that we have the intent here. The LLCs that this is addressing, you know, quite specifically in the example for legal intent is Lifelight, which of course is a consortium of a series of nonprofit entities. They operate on a Part 135 certificate, which is simply an FFA certificate. But the important part that needs to be placed on the record is if you look at the bill itself and it talks about the parent entities, you will recall that we passed another piece of legislation out that requires the submission of C-12s and 990s to the assessors for nonprofit status and its normal yearly approval, basically an informational return. It just needs to be clear on the record that in an entity such as this, that it would be copies of the C-12 and 990 from the parent corporations because the LLC itself is a consortium. And it doesn't stand alone as a C-12 and a 990. I don't think that there's any problem or any conflict between the two laws. We just need to ensure that we note in the record and that it is on the record that that's the procedure and that's what would happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. SB 149 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Bocas, would you carry this bill?
Oh, I'm just peachy keen. Yes, I will.
Thank you. We'll close the work session and open up a simultaneous public hearing on Senate Bill 592 and Senate Bill 702. These are income tax reductions that we're looking at, and we have more than just these scenarios here to look at for review and for, I guess, contemplation and for purposes of discussion on what it would look like to, I guess, for my purposes, helping middle-class Oregonians. And I think these are relevant as we look at the larger revenue package as something to include into that package. So in the meantime, we have Christine here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have sort of outlined some of the options for tax reductions that may help to, I highlighted more of the progressive end of the tax reductions. And so there's a page, this is just page B5 from the basic facts document, and there are some different options in here highlighted in yellow to potentially lower taxes at the lower or middle income levels. There's options including doubling the width of the 5% and 7% brackets. That has a revenue impact of around $940 million per biennium. Then there is also widening the two lowest brackets by $1,000. And
when you say widen, what do you mean by that?
Well, currently the lowest bracket is from zero to $3,400. And so this would make the lowest bracket from zero to $4,400, okay, or double that for joint filers. And then the
so
next.
When you double the width, what are you talking about there? Going double that amount?
Yeah, so it would doubling the width would actually increase the size of the bracket from zero to $3,400 to zero to $6,400 at the lowest level, the 5% level. And then the next bracket, instead of being $3,400 to $8,500, it would be $6,800 to $16,000 or $17,000. And so it basically would reduce taxes for everyone, because everybody pays 5% and 7% on those first bits of income. But the proportion of the income and the tax would be larger for someone with a lower income or a middle income, and so it would reduce their taxes by more as a percentage of their total. So there's another option here also to double a standard deduction, and so that would be to $2,175 for single filers, and it currently. And so if you doubled that, the revenue impact would be about a little less than $400 million per biennium. another option is to increase the personal exemption credit by $10. And that has a smaller revenue impact of $27 million per year, or roughly a little bit over $50 million per biennium. That's scalable, too, so it could be increased by any amount larger than that, and roughly would the revenue impact would increase proportionally. So those are some of the other types of policies that may be in line with what Senate Bill 592 and Senate Bill 702 are doing. There also in all this should be an example of a taxpayer who is going to be affected by the rate cut from 4.5% to 6.5% to 8.5%. at the three lowest brackets and keeping the 9.9% bracket. This is, there are three examples. A personal income taxpayer who is a joint filer and they have two dependents. And so currently, there's a bit of feedback with the federal taxes, but the Oregon tax liability would go from $1,736 to $1,569 for a person, a family that made $40,000 a year. At a little higher income level, the family's taxes would go from $3,360 to $3,103. And to the option three has a little bit higher deduction amount because they are able to itemize their deductions. And they also make $80,000 a year. And so the taxes would decline by $320 roughly, from $4,351 to $4,038 due to that rate change. So you can see there how it affects different types of taxpayers.
So, and this is the 702?
Yes, the one that would change the bottom.
Change the rates, and so a taxpayer in making $60,000 AGI would save about $257 a year.
That's correct. Yes.
And $80,000 would be $312.
That's correct.
All taxpayers, high end to low end, would see some savings here because the first few thousand dollars go into these 5, 7, and 9 buckets.
Yes.
But it primarily would have a much larger effect on middle and lower income. That's what you said.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Yeah. If you expressed it as a proportion of the total tax, that proportion would be higher for the lower or middle income people.
And the cost to do that one is
so that
$500.
That the cost for that one, actually, Senate Bill 702 and Senate Bill 592 have very similar revenue impacts. In a full biennium, they would be around $840 million in lower revenue. And so starting in tax year 2018, the impact in 2017-19 would be $547.5 million, just a preliminary estimate of that. Also, the Senate Bill 592, which would widen those lower brackets, is a lot. It's almost like the first option in the basic facts document that's highlighted. Below the earned income tax credit ones, which is doubling the width of the 5 and 7% brackets. It's almost that policy. It's like a little bit less of a change than that one, but it's also $840 million in a biennium. So,
if we double the standard deduction, I know that's not in either of these two bills, but can you ballpark who receives the benefit of that tax break?
Oh, sure. Yes, Mr. Chair. The itemized deductions are typically taken by higher income taxpayers. They either have more property or are more likely to own their homes or have higher value homes. And between the property tax and the home mortgage interest deduction, would have a little bit more incentive to itemize. And so generally you see itemizers to be higher income people. And so when you double that standard deduction, you affect more of the lower income people and increase the deduction they can take. And so the impacts of that do fall more to the low and middle income segment of the population and people who rent, they don't have homes or other reasons to itemize.
Senator Boquist?
Just refresh my memory. This is all fine, but we're on a annual reconnect to the federal, not a roll-in reconnect, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, the The substantial part of the connection to the federal taxes is rolling. Just the fact that the statute refers to the taxable income at the federal level, that's in place, and that's not necessarily renewed every year, although every year there's the option to disconnect somehow.
Mm-hmm. So. Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
So when the federal government does tax reform or tax increases or tax decreases, if they make substantial changes to their deductions and their stuff, so on and so forth, we don't necessarily, other than the AGI, that's where we connect to them, correct?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Boquist, that is correct, yeah. So any changes to the AGI would roll into Oregon.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Christina, do you have at your disposal the property tax or local government tax deduction here? And the reason I ask is because we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but if that proposal from the federal government comes through next year or late this year, just wondering what would be if that were eliminated, and then because of our connection we eliminate ours, what would be the revenue impact? And then, you know, we could look at then offsetting it with one of these.
Sure, Mr. Chair, that is correct. So we're connected to the Schedule A, mm-hmm. at the federal level, and so the deductions when Oregon's itemized deductions are based off of the Schedule A, and so when that changes, the property tax would potentially go away, and yeah, it would be a substantial, in the range of probably about, I'm trying to recall what the property tax revenue impact is from that deduction, but it's substantial.
It's substantial.
Yeah.
Senator Boquist?
So what you're suggesting, Mr. Chair, is that if the federal eliminates it, then we need to put it back in order to protect the property tax. Is that?
No, I'm saying we eliminate it, but we compensate by, widening to 5 and 7, mm-hmm. or whatever, doing 702 or 592, some variation of that, just, an equal amount.
All right. Mr. Chair, my only observation is that the optics of when we say we're going to broaden the bracket at the bottom, it might make sense to the four of us sitting here, and it might make sense to, the 16 on the House Revenue Committee. But some of our colleagues in the public at large, don't necessarily grasp the widening of the bracket as, even though on the in-state they see their taxes go down hypothetically, whereas if you do a rate reduction, that's pretty clean,
yeah,
in the eyes of the public.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and that'd be my preference. So I wasn't picking double widening, and it's that same reason, that sort of optics that make it harder for me to go with like the double standard deduction, which doesn't easily translate to a lot of people, rate reduction. But that's just me.
Oh, and Mr. Chair, I was able to look at the property tax revenue impact from the federal deduction for property taxes. It is $470.6 million in 2017-18.
470 for a biennium?
Mm-hmm. Home mortgage interest is more than twice that.
We're not going to touch home mortgage interest. Don't call.
Don't email. Don't visit.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Smart answer, Senator.
We do have, I think, someone from Senator Knope's office here to testify on Senate Bill 592. Would you like to come up?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for having me. My name's Ross McKenzie, Mr. Chair, Senators. I was just here to put my support behind SB 592. I think it would be a good way to reduce the tax burden on the lower class here in Oregon, lower individuals on the tax bracket, on the scale. Basically, it would free up a lot of paperwork from many of these individuals are already receiving government benefits of some kind. It just doesn't quite make sense to then be taxing them if they're receiving these benefits ultimately. I know that it would open up a hole in revenue, and so you know there's various things that we could hopefully reduce funding or expenditures to things such as maybe the film production development, which seems to be mostly helping out-of-state individuals rather than the Oregonian. Yes, I think that it would just be a good update to our current brackets.
Okay. Senator Polk, please.
Thank you. Let me give a statement first, then ask you a question to take back to the good senator. There are certainly scenarios in the last 90 days in which, you know, the federal Congress is likely to cut taxes, which then means we automatically raise. So the hole for revenue might not be as draconian as some would think. That being said, Senator Knopes put forward basically a widening of the brackets versus a reduction of the rate. And philosophically, I understand exactly what his intent is, but if you heard us mention earlier, the optics, if the common citizen is walking on the street and you telling him we just widened the bracket for the 5% tax rate, he's probably gonna look at you thinking you drank too many pints in the Pearl District. However, if you told him we just cut your tax rate from 5% to 4.5 or 5% to 4%, they're more likely that is going to resonate. And so my question that I know you don't know the answer for, but you can take back to Senator Knope, is that regardless of whether it's widening or what it is he amenable if we were to do something in the next 90 days to something that the public would understand and it'd be more simplified? Accomplish the same thing, but more simplified. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes. Thank you, Chair and Senator Boquist. Yes, I don't want to speak on behalf of the senator, of course, but I think he means what he's looking for. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. McKenzie, good job. Thank you. Well, we'll keep looking at these. I don't, you know, obviously the state's not in a position to just pass an income tax cut, period, without coupling it with something else to do an offset, but it is something that I think, given Oregon's high income tax rates, it's something that represents good policy if we can couple it with something else to offset the cost. So we'll keep looking at the scenarios. Thank you, Christine. And that's all for now, and we'll be back here tomorrow at 8:30. We're adjourned. 30. We're adjourned.